Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. On November 9th, 2022, welcome to the K-12 Education Talk Radio. And by the way, regardless of the date, I'm still Larry Jacobs. It's nice to have you here today. It's also nice to have my guest here today. We're going to be talking to Chris Amundson. Chris is the author of a new book. Keep it on before I'll explain it in a second. It's called Unfinished Learning. I have it linked. If you're listening, you can see the link over there. Unfinished Learning, Parents, Schools, and the COVID School Closure. She's really good at writing about parents and schools and involvement in education. She's great at that. I highly recommend anything she writes. She's a former teacher and school board chair and state legislator and CEO of NASBE's State Boards of Education. She's written extensively about parent involvement in education. She's great. And we're going to talk to her about the new book again. It's called Unfinished Learning. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. where we archive all our shows, and that's our home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Go over there. We're just about, we may even do it today. And again, today is Wednesday, the 9th of November. Did I say the 8th before? It's the 9th. Okay, and we're putting a new issue of the magazine Equity and Access up there today at ace-ed.org. And if you go over there, we'll not only archive this podcast, and all the podcasts are over there, but we also have the teacherretention.com linked and also SEL Today linked over there. They're good websites, so check it out. I hope you do. We're trying to get all that good information out there. So, and we work hard at it, believe me, and my good partner, Maya Appleby, down in Florida. I'm up here in Maine, where it is amazingly chilly. It was about 25 degrees here this morning after a 75-degree day 2 days ago. Let's find out what it is in Virginia. Hi, Chris. Larry here.
Hey, good morning. It's good to be with you. How are you?
I'm just fine. I'm watching the election results. I've got the TV off now, but we'll see what happens. It was very different from what everybody predicted.
I was like everybody in America up till a million o'clock. So if I don't entirely track, we're all, I think, a little sleep deprived, but stunned that the predictions were just completely wrong.
Yeah, you got to leave it up to the people. That's all there is to it, and someday we'll figure that
exactly
out. Okay,
exactly.
I'll just mention Dewey didn't defeat Truman, and we'll go from there. You know,
right?
It's that simple. And welcome back to the show, Chris. It's great to have you here, and I'm so glad you got in touch so we could do this show. I just want to read. I got the book linked here over to Amazon, but I just want to go over what this is, the book is about. Unfinished Learning. Chris Amundson's our guest. Follows families as they navigate the challenges of virtual learning, from figuring out how to log on to a sometimes unstable school platform, to everybody sharing the computer, to ensuring their kids' special education needs. Some people did great. Other people did lousy during the pandemic. Okay, we did our best, obviously. They invented they were building the plane as they were flying, but there is an impact from the COVID school closures that affected some people more than others. And I know you love writing about family engagement and with schools and all that. These are public schools, so it's good that families are involved. Chris, I'm going to, you know, what prompted you to write all this? What happened?
Yeah.
Something must have happened.
So really, back in the very beginning of school closures, and back in that time, you may remember when we were all still washing our groceries. It was about that early.
Are you kidding me? We used to leave the mail on the porch for 2 days
because
the mailman touched it.
Exactly.
It was only two or three years ago. It seems like a million years ago. Yeah.
Right. It was 2.5 years ago, which feels like a million. And we didn't, there wasn't much science. And there was no leadership whatsoever from the federal level. There were in some countries, and we can later talk about, I just wrote an op-ed for the Richmond paper about how different things were in Norway. But what I will say for here is I started to hear.
Thank you, Ms. Amundson. I got the Norway connection there, Ms. Amundson.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I started hearing stories from my friends about their kids and from young people that I knew that were now suddenly between a Friday, the 13th, and the following Monday in March of 2020, they went from sending their kids off to school to trying to figure out how they were going to do online learning. And it did not go well. It went very badly from the start. It went badly even if your family was the sort of advantaged and privileged family that had enough internet, you know, connectivity. A lot of families, I mean, if you were a family that had been taking your kid to McDonald's to use the Wi-Fi in the week before testing happened, then, you know, this was going to be particularly hard for you. If you were a family whose only smart device was a smartphone, you were just not going to be able to get your kid online. So, but even for families who had computers and connectivity and the freedom to work at home, things just didn't go well from the start. Teachers had almost no support in figuring out, you know, an activity that you can do that would be gangbusters in your classroom doesn't work online.
That's right.
And, you know,
we asked teachers to do something they were not at all trained to do.
They were not trained or prepared to do.
And they did pretty well, all things considered. But I'm not, you know, I'm defending teachers, but it was a horrible situation. You know what I mean?
Well, what I'm going to say also is that teachers, we now know, worked 2 or 3 hours a day longer than they had been working when they were in their classrooms. Now, teachers already work longer than their paid hours, as we know. So teachers were breaking their necks. Families were going crazy, trying desperately to figure out how they were going to, particularly in that early time, you might have to sign on at 9:05 on Zoom for reading class, and then at 11:14 on Microsoft Teams for math. You know, I talked to one family that said, you know, we have between us 3 degrees, including 1 advanced degree in education, created a spreadsheet, and it took us an hour and a half to figure out where our daughter, our third grade daughter, had to be online every day so she could get the classes that she needed. So it was a disaster. It was a disaster if you had access. And if you were a family that didn't have access, and huge, huge numbers, most of them you will not be surprised to learn, the kids who need in-person schooling most. So kids from low-income families, kids who whose families didn't speak English. All of those kids were completely, I mean, the school door was essentially shut. So for huge numbers of kids, school ended in March. And I started feeling like somebody needed to tell their story. You know, somebody was going to have to tell this story. This was something we had never gone through in this country. So that's what I started to do. And the way that I always work when I'm working on a project is I just call up smart people and ask them a lot of questions. And in this case, the smart people were also parents who were living through this. And so I just talked to them and followed them, and several of them I called, you know, a couple of times, how's it going now? And then I started to look at the data, and it was worse than I thought it was going to be. So that's why I ended up deciding that somebody had to tell the story, and it was me. So that's how the book started.
And you're a good author, and you know this, you know the world of education as well as anyone does, I got to tell you. Okay, and
it's
good stuff. And I don't really mean that. You've always been so involved. And I don't know that I just read this before. You're a former teacher. You're a state board of education chairperson. You were state legislator. I mentioned NASBE. I mean, it's just you're really so well grounded in all this, and it's so great. Let me ask you the question for the end of the book. What do you want people to learn from this? I mean, what you're writing about and the ordeal that folks went through, I mean, it has to be told. I absolutely 100% agree with that. Okay. But when all's said and done, All right. Where do you want the book to go? What do you want people to realize from it?
I'd say a couple of things. One, first of all, is we have to stop being defensive about the fact that this was a terrible thing that we did to kids. Nobody did it intentionally.
That's right.
That's right. Possibly, I mean, there were bad decisions made at every level of government, from Donald Trump's refusal even to track the number of cases so that school administrators who desperately wanted to know if they should keep schools open or close them didn't have any accurate information to work with.
I have to say, I mean, you don't usually get very political, but it is the day after election. I have to say, back in those days, because that's a couple of years ago now, President Trump was not useful. Okay, he was not, in my opinion, useful.
Right. And look, governors, all 50 of them, every last one of them, made the decision that when it came time to figure out, as a country, we shut everything down for a period of a couple of months. And then we had to make decisions about what we were going to reopen and in what order. Now, one would have thought, and in fact, in some European countries, including my beloved Norway, what government said was our top priority is going to be getting kids back in classrooms. And everything else that we decide is going to be centered with, it's going to be like kids are going to be in the center and the adults are going to be around them, basically protecting them. And so we will open other things as long as it does not interfere with the ability of children to go back to school. We, of course, did the opposite. And what I will tell you, Larry, that I will never get over is that we reopened bars and tattoo parlors and not classrooms.
Wow.
And with predictable results. Children need to be in school. They need you for 85% probably of children, you need a teacher working with you to learn, for example, how to read. There are some kids who just figure it out and breeze on. But for most kids, what we know is somebody has to teach you how to do that.
Right.
And
exactly.
Which,
by the way, I always say is an absolute miracle that teachers teach kids how to read. I think that's absolutely fascinating. I don't know how they do it.
I know. Maybe that'll be my next book, Larry, what happens.
It's just amazing to me.
With helping kids learn to read. When kids get to third grade, they need to learn to multiply and divide, because if you think about it, all of algebra and the math beyond depends on a clear understanding of fractions. Now, if you are never taught how to multiply and divide, you're just essentially shut out of advanced math until you acquire those skills. And again, there probably are some small percentage of kids who just figure it out, but most kids need to be taught. So there are these huge gaps. It is not when I say that there are huge, huge learning loss gaps. I am not blaming teachers, but I am saying we have to acknowledge it, we have to be honest about it, and we have to fix it. So that's the first thing.
I want to ask you this, and this has always bugged me about quote, I'll call it learning loss, unfinished learning, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
All right. I want to say this the right way. You know, a lot of people got into the same boat. You know, schools were closed, like you said, for a given period of time, and everybody did the best we can. Okay. But, you know, everybody in that same boat, can we get somehow over the course of the next few years, okay, catch them up? And then at the end of the line, okay, 12th grade, just come back a little bit. They don't have to learn quite everything we did for a few years, okay, and then bring it back now that COVID is over. And I'm always wondering, you know, we've got time to fix this. All right. And what's your thought on that?
Yeah,
I'm curious, Chris.
Let me segment that because I want to answer two parts of it. One is, can't we catch them up? And the answer is yes, we absolutely can.
Sure we can.
We know how to do that. We are not doing it, but we know how. And here's what it takes. And for this, I talked with the late Robert Slavin, whom I'm sure you had. His lifetime on this podcast, because he's such an expert. And I actually, with a group of other people, started a tutoring program that is ongoing now in Northern Virginia, using the Slavin research and principles.
Nice.
And here's what Slavin told us and what we do, which is, first, if you say a child is a year behind, say, in math, it doesn't mean the kid doesn't know any of the things that he would need to know to, right? There are some things he does know. So the first thing you have to do is diagnose as clearly as you can, and there are really good diagnostic instruments that will help you do that, so that if the kid already knows fractions but doesn't get decimals, focus on the areas that the kid needs to know. So that's the first thing, is you got to have clear diagnostics. And if you've had, any medical issues, you know that the doctor, spends a great deal of time on diagnostics, because, I'm not going to go in and do surgery until I know precisely where I'm going.
Right.
That's exactly what we have to do. So the first thing is diagnostics. The second thing is extra time then focused on those areas of loss. And our tutoring program actually operates after school. I think there are some schools, particularly middle schools, that are using their activity period now. What we know is that teachers cannot do that in a classroom. There is not time for a teacher to create an individualized lesson plan for each of 25 kids in 5 classes a day. So there are going to have to be additional people to help. And those have to be trained.
Yeah.
Slavin argues, and I agree, they have to be paid. In our tutoring program, we're using aspiring educators. And they are then getting skills at doing diagnostics. They're getting skills at doing remedial education, because you and I both know. I mean, gosh, when I went into a classroom as a first-year teacher, I had no more idea of how to help a kid who was behind than I knew how
time.
To fly. I mean, so we are giving teachers those skills that they are going to need when they get into their own classrooms. So that's what it is. You got to have consistency 3 times a week. You got to have really small groups, 2 or 3. And if you do those things, you can get kids caught up.
Yeah, and
mostly
what about, Chris, let me ask you this.
What
about, and I always, I talk to a lot of ed tech companies, and they all have, quote, I'll say personalized learning, where if a kid doesn't understand something, he stays there, so to speak, on screen until they learn it, and then they move on. All right? And, it's good. That's good. That's a wonderful use of technology.
Right.
Okay, in education, you agree with that, certainly. Okay, where does that fit into all this?
I guess my question is,
do you feel like teachers, we can use that to catch these kids up and solve this unfinished learning challenge?
Yeah. It is not a magic bullet, but a good teacher should use that as well as everything else. I don't care if it's puppet shows, for God's sake, that people need to get a kid to figure out that, the F letter says F, B letter says B. There are tools available. There are good teaching techniques, but somebody has to plan it and organize it and focus on it. So that's the first thing is, we can catch kids up. Now, the second thing is, can't we just back off on some of what we...
Yeah.
And here's my worry about that. My daughter would not have been backed off. I would have ensured that she had BC calculus no matter what. Right? You would have ensured your kid got exactly the classes and the skills and all of that that he or she would have needed to get into whatever program wanted to go to.
Exactly.
Who's not going to get that are, again, the poor kids, the kids whose parents don't speak English, the kids whose parents don't know how to navigate the whole end of school process to get their kids into any kind of advantageous position. So my worry is, no, we can't do things that we know are going to increase inequity. We just can't. And I will say this.
I agree with that.
Tom Kane from Harvard.
Yep.
Does the school closures and the learning loss, and we, of course, have now just seen it in the National Assessment of Educational Progress.
I'm just going to ask you about those, but go ahead. Please.
Yeah, I'll do that in a minute. I mean, which is basically Chapter 8 of my book, if there were a Chapter 8. But he says it is the biggest increase in educational inequity generation. Mm-hmm. It is devastating, and it will be devastating. Kids like mine and yours will end up mostly okay. Now, many of us know people. I had a friend who was a military kid, and she moved every year. And there were just occasionally little things that she just flat didn't know. And it was because they taught it in third grade when she was somewhere, you know.
Exactly.
They taught it in
fourth grade
when
exactly.
she was in third grade, and then the next year, you know. So, like, writing the
That's one of the reasons I always liked Common Core. But, you know, what can I tell you?
Right,
we'll
exactly.
move on from that.
So, like, writing the five-paragraph essay, I mean, anybody can learn it, but you have to be, it's not intuitive. You have to be taught it. And if they taught it in seventh grade and you were in sixth grade and so you didn't get it, and then the next place when you got to seventh grade, they had already taught it in sixth grade, you're just going to miss that. My friend Toddy was like that. She'd just have these weird little gaps, and she'd go, oh, yeah.
I'm laughing. It's not funny, but it is. But yeah, it just jumps, you know.
Well, it is funny. So, but by and large, our kids, you know, upper middle class kids are going to, in the end, come out of this okay. It is the kids who need school the most, who are not, you know, it's every time we back off, those are the kids who get hurt. And that I just, you know, I can't live with that. I just can't.
So what's the answer? And by the way, I want to say something which I love about your book. You didn't call the book Learning Loss, okay, like it's lost forever. You called it unfinished learning. In other words, we can still finish it. Okay, it's an unfinished race.
But
we got to run that last quarter.
Although it's a little bit of a slam at the people who wouldn't let us talk about learning loss. And in fact, I tell the story in the book of back in the Carter administration when inflation and recession were very rampant. Alfred Kahn was then the head of the he was doing deregulation of the airlines, but he was an economist. He was a really well-respected economist. And he used to talk about the recession. And then the White House called him up and informed him that as a member of the administration, he was not permitted to use the word recession. So Fred Kahn started calling it a banana. And he would say, the banana's pretty bad, and it doesn't look like the banana is going to, you know. And so deciding we can't say learning loss is a little bit like calling it a banana. It was learning loss. If we don't do something about it, it will be lost.
Exactly. But is your feeling we can do something about it? What's your thought on that?
Yes, we can. And
so it's unfinished. It's unfinished.
I mean, it is.
That's why I love your title.
I'm not big on you'll be shocked to learn this. I'm not big on euphemisms. right? Because I am such a, you know, such a beat around the bush kind of girl.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I am fine with slapping people in the head. And saying, look, you know, because now already my worry is that already people are saying, oh, well, things are back to normal. Kids are in school. And, you know,
no, they aren't back to normal.
We they are not back to normal. They're not back to normal social and emotional behavior.
Right,
still
right.
Just off the charts, driving people crazy.
Well, it's forcing teachers out of the profession, which is really
bad.
And there's no pipeline behind it. Yeah, there's no pipeline behind it, which is really bad.
Which is very, very worrisome. So that's where I am on it. So that's the first thing is, yes, we can fix it, but we have to. And we have to make it, that means we have to make it a real priority. So that's A. B, a second thing that I talk about a lot is that, and this is something that I learned in part from Carol Basil, who is the dean of the teacher preparation programs at Arizona State University.
Mm-hmm.
And what she says is, you know, so for years we said to teachers, you go into a classroom with 25 kids, and we want you to not only meet all of their learning needs, which may span 4 or 5 different grade levels, but also all of their social and emotional needs. And then she said, then we said, and now we want you to do all of that online. Well, it didn't work, and it didn't work in person, and it didn't work even more online. So what we have to do is rethink that whole one teacher in a classroom with 25 kids model. And you can call it team teaching. I mean, there have been different approaches. Arizona State is doing some really groundbreaking work, I think, where they pair or team up, you know, really highly experienced teachers with younger, less experienced teachers,
mm-hmm.
with teacher preparation, you know, preparing teachers and paraprofessionals. All of that, and there were a few schools in Arizona that had that model before COVID hit, and what they found was that it was really very helpful in getting kids through the pandemic. Kids knew how to be online. If a teacher, God help us, got COVID, and teachers got COVID, there was somebody who could step in who already knew those kids. There was, you know, so I think that's the second thing is let's re-look at the teacher workforce and how we deploy the people we have. Because
that should be your next book.
As you say.
That should be your next book.
As you say.
Redeploying the troops. Redeploying the troops. You know,
and
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. You go ahead.
Good. And then the third thing that I would say is this. So if there was, it is an ill wind that blows no good. And the one.
And you can quote her. And you can quote Chris.
Right,
on that.
Yeah, right. Nobody ever said that before, right? But the one really positive thing that came out of the pots of money, that when the feds finally turned the money spigot on, you know, boy, if there is one thing the federal government can do, it is move money fast.
Yep.
And so they made it possible for schools to take their 10-year technology plans and turn them into 6-month technology plans. There was a period of time where there were no Chromebooks available in the United States of America. There were no chips, and there just weren't any. I had a friend who finally, you know, had some shipped in from Seoul, and I'm not making
I remember that.
but
you know, a million years ago, 2.5 years.
Right.
Yeah, we remember all those stories.
At the end
yeah.
of the pandemic, pretty much every kid had a device and connectivity.
Yeah.
Now, that is really good. That is good news. And yet, because I think everybody was sick of being online, like, I'm hearing, you know, kids have to turn the computers in at the end of the year and teachers aren't using it. They aren't ever saying, let's go online and do some activities that way. You know, it's like now that we've actually got that accomplished, now can we figure out what we can do with technology when every kid actually has access to it? Because we're not, once again, shockingly, not doing the greatest job of it. And I understand why everybody kind of thinks, I'm going to vomit if I have to turn on a Zoom platform again.
Don't vomit.
But,
don't vomit.
But
it's too early in the day.
Those are my three big things. Are one, acknowledge that we've got the problem, and then two, use the research we know to fix it, and change the way we deploy teachers and figure out how to use technology. So my 3 points turned into four, but there you go.
That's okay. You turn them into six if you want. Okay. I have a question for you. The book is, everybody, Chris Amundsen's our guest, Unfinished Learning. I got it linked on the site, Parents, Schools, and the COVID School Closures. Okay. Who do you want to read the book? Where do you want the book to land and impact? Do you want politicians? Do you want teachers? Do you want parents? You're probably going to say all of the above, but I'm curious, in your mind, who'd you write it for?
Yeah. Okay. So one is, I do feel like education policymakers need to read it because I think they're learning the wrong lessons from, you know, then there was, of course, a huge amount of parent activism. The longer parents stayed at home, you know, the madder they got. And then they got really active in some elections. I think the San Francisco school board elections were three.
They recalled those people. Yep.
Right. I think that is absolutely a direct result. You know, parents were sitting at home tuning in to watch the school board meetings. And I can tell you, when I was on school board, nobody watched the school board meetings. It was a great thing. You toiled in obscurity, and it was a wonderful, wonderful way to do public service. But then everybody was locked up. So suddenly they're tuning in. And instead of hearing their school boards talk about how are we going to get kids back to the in-class learning and what are we doing about reading scores and all of that, you know, they saw school boards doing what I would call performative politics, you know, let's pass a resolution filled with lots of words that doesn't actually do anything. Let's rename a whole bunch of schools, including like Dianne Feinstein is suddenly
Washington or Abe Lincoln, whatever it was in San Francisco.
Right,
responsible
for racial inequality in America. So crazy. So education policymakers need to understand that the parents now are kind of on to policymakers.
That's good.
And what they need to see and hear is school boards and school superintendents who are focused like a laser on what are we going to do now to get these kids back to where we know they can be, but they aren't. So that's the first group, is those policymakers need to read it because they need to understand that. Second, I would say political, not the school board types, but state legislators and members of Congress, governors, need to understand that there's a lot of talk and we hear people saying, oh, it was critical race theory was the reason that, you know, a certain governor in Virginia won his election.
Governor Youngkin, everybody.
I mean,
Governor Youngkin.
I went back. I looked at the polling. I looked at focus groups. It was school closures. It was parents just saying, this is just not acceptable. We, you know, our kids needed to be back in school, and they weren't. And so I think that's the second thing. The third group that I want to read it are journalists, because God knows, writing about education is a hard job. But I think so many of these reporters just kind of miss the boat. And so I think they need to get more involved with, they need to learn how to look at things like test scores. And I know teachers hate saying we got to look at test scores, but, you know, it's like you can say, I want to lose weight, but I never want to step on the scale. I mean, sooner or later, we got to kind of know
Good analogy.
Yeah, right. You know, we got to know where we are. And that doesn't mean have lost, you know, an entire two decades of progress. I am not saying, and Mrs. Jones, in the Waynewood Elementary School fourth grade, it is your fault. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that if you are a fourth grade teacher, if you were a fourth grade teacher at the beginning of 2021, or you know, with kids who are with at the beginning of that school year when kids had been out for a full year, I heard stories of kids who walked in fourth grade classes and the number of children who knew how to multiply in that classroom was zero.
Mm.
And the teacher said to me, I can
now
teach
what?
Him how to multiply.
Yeah. Now
but
what?
I can't also teach him fourth grade math.
Yeah. It's brutal. It's brutal.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
Chris,
you know.
I mean, really,
so that's it.
I mean, you put together something good here, and I'm going to add, if I may, school board members, okay,
mm-hmm.
and it's school administrators more so than teachers need to read the book. Chris knows what she's talking about, and she has always. I have to say this about you, Chris. You always put yourself right in the middle of what you're talking about. It's not like you're looking at it from afar. Okay, again, you were very involved, state board chairperson. Okay, this is the voice of the people. Okay, you were a state legislator, voice of the people. You were the NASB CEO, which is the State Boards of Education CEO, the association. I mean, it's just, you really do. So you see it from the inside out. Your words are always good to us. So good. What can I say, Chris? Good luck with the book. It's terrific.
Oh,
you did good.
Thanks
you did good,
so
pal.
Much.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, yeah, it's always great. As you can tell, I get a little revved up, but it's
that's okay. I'm glad you do. I love it.
It's a great. It's always a joy to be with you.
And it's a pleasure to have you here. Okay, my friend, you take care, Chris, and thank you.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Bye.
Okay. Bye, Chris Amundson, everybody. You know her background. The book's Unfinished Learning, and I have it linked here. The subtitle is Parents, Schools, and the COVID School Closures. Okay? We had to build the plane while we were flying it. Now we got to look back and see how that flight went. Okay? And we got to make sure that, God forbid, anything like that happens again, we do it differently and better. Okay? We all tried. Okay? We all tried. Okay? Now we got to look back on it. Okay, you got to step on the scale. All right, we're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.